Okay. Say something right before we start.
Hey, Hawkeye fans. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register with Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. We are back with our Tuesday podcast, our YouTube podcast with Talking Hawkeyes. It's been a while. Thanks for the patience during the off week. Obviously, we had a radio show last week. Kennington, but this is our first YouTube pod since after the Illinois game. The mood, has it changed much? I don't know. I guess we're going into Iowa at Ohio State this week. Before we get into our three downs, I guess just give you the floor here. How are you doing? And are you ready to kind of turn the page into the second half of this season?
Yeah, 100%. I'm good. Spent a week back home in Georgia. It was UGA's homecoming, so spent a weekend back home. Got a chance to see my parents for a little bit. Got a chance to DJ the alumni homecoming party. Went to the tailgate. Watched Alabama lose on our quad. So came home for Georgia's homecoming. Alabama took an L. Got to see my family. It was 80 degrees down south. So I truthfully don't have many complaints. Looking forward to the second half of the season. And we're really starting this on a pretty crazy note, opening up with the number two team in the country in Ohio State. In my opinion, I feel like they really should be number one with how dominant they've been throughout this season. And it truly is a daunting task for Iowa's team. But to your point, the mood hasn't really changed much. And I feel like the players at least feel like they do have a very real chance of still going to the Big Ten championship game, as crazy as that may sound to those of us on the outside. But this is a chance for them to kind of put their best foot forward. And even if it's in a losing effort, maybe try to establish some tangible things that can carry them through the rest of the season.
And that's exactly where our first down starts today, Kennington, is how close can Iowa keep this game? Can Iowa stay close? The Hawkeyes are 29-point underdogs. That is the largest they have been an underdog since 2000. Of course, you kind of the Kirk Ferentz era is divided into a couple segments. One is the first 2 years, which is all rebuilding and, you know, just getting demolished for a couple years, and then it's pretty much everything else ever since. So in the 22 years since, Iowa has only gotten beat three times by 30 or more points, or 29 or more points, as it were. Actually, 30 or more. And that would have been 2004 against Arizona State. It would have been 2014 at Minnesota, both 37-point losses. And then, of course, the Big Ten Championship game last year against Michigan, 39. So this is pretty rare that if Iowa were to get blown out and Ohio State were to cover the spread. And I don't know if we're talking as much about that, but can the Hawkeyes keep this game competitive, which I know is not like what the players are talking about. They're talking about winning and losing. But I think from our perspective, we just want to – can Iowa make a respectable showing? And that's why I wrote about today Iowa's last trip to Columbus, which is 2013. And I don't expect you to remember this, Kennington, but Iowa was – an 18.5-point underdog that day with a kind of a questioned offense, came off a bye week and played Braxton Miller, Carlos Hyde, and Joey Bosa to the wire. I mean, they played – Iowa led that game for certain stretches, and it was 24-24 entering the fourth quarter. Hawkeyes used a lot of three tight end sets, played some ball control, threw to the tight ends constantly, and hung around in that game. And so that's kind of why I set this up to you. You know, what is the path for Iowa to keep this one close, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that first, just to start on the point spread, I think that this has very little to do with Iowa's defense. And I'm sure you can agree with it. And a lot of it is just a lack of faith by those who make these odds in their offense. I think that people are foreseeing this to be a game where Iowa's offense is going to be overmatched. They're going to be consistently three and outing, maybe even turning the ball over. And the defense is going to be on the field for a very long time. That's been the theme throughout Iowa's first six games. I don't have a writer from me. I'd have to sift through the paper, but Iowa's at the bottom of the Big Ten in time of possession. And I think that a lot of that has also skewed the defense's statistics. They probably could even be even better if it was a little more even. So I think that's where the spread is coming from. I think that the pathway for Iowa to keeping this game competitive is to do what they did, I guess, in that fourth quarter against Michigan, the last time that Kurt Ferentz said that he saw tangible steps forward for the offense, where they're actually sustaining drives and potentially putting points on the board. I think that they're going to have to go on, you know, 7-play, 8-play, 9-play possessions, keep Ohio State's offense off of the field. There is no stopping Ohio State's offense, and I think that the players on defense understand that. It's about limiting them and limiting the big plays as much as they possibly can, and how Iowa's offense can contribute in limiting those big plays is by keeping them on the sideline. So the focus for me is how much tangible progress can Iowa's offense make from the last time that we saw them to this Saturday, and can they put some drives together? I think that we've heard so much in these last few weeks about them being, you know, a half step here, a half step there, or a few plays here or there from changing the outcomes of the game. How much of that were they able to refine in this bye week and in the early part of this week, that there might be something tangible on Saturday to where they can give their defense a little bit of support? But I think that the defense is going to do what they can. They're going to do their best, obviously, and the offense is going to do their best as well. But I think the pathway for keeping this, I mean, spread 29.5, I'm thinking, you know, 14, within 14 points, like keeping it in two possessions would probably be, I think that's kind of where this question is going. In the way that Iowa can do that is by the offense sustaining drives and giving their defense a little bit of support that way.
Yeah, I mean, just think about, let's say, and I'm not comparing Iowa to Texas, but let's say Texas, I think it was week two, is like they were 20-some point underdog to Alabama. And obviously they have Quinn Ewers and Iowa doesn't, but I'm just saying, like, that was a game where even though Texas didn't win, I think there was a lot of tangible momentum for Texas coming out of that game. You can see that when you face a team and you don't beat them, you can see how that momentum can help. And nobody wants to hear about a moral victory, anything like that. But one of the reasons I wrote about that 2013 game was because Iowa did pick up a little momentum from that loss. They lost 34-24, but then they came home against Northwestern the next week, which is exactly what happens next week for Iowa. And they won four of their final five games of the season. And I think that's kind of at this point in the season where we are at with this Hawkeye football team. Winning four out of five after this week, Kennington, would seem to be, you know, a remarkable accomplishment given what we've seen from the offense thus far. Yet at that same time, it does not seem that far-fetched if you can get some tangible progress this week. And that's kind of why I framed this question, is can Iowa look good enough to where we come out of this game on Saturday saying, okay, they hung in there, they gave Ohio State its best shot. Yeah, the offense looked okay. Now let's point out, Ohio State has the number five defense in the country. That might surprise you with all the offensive weapons, but they've only allowed one team to exceed 300 yards this season, and that was Toledo at 307. So this is not a team that gives up a lot of yards, but it also isn't, the defense isn't on the field that much, as you pointed out. So I don't know. I guess let me just frame it to you that way. What will it take for us to feel good about this Iowa team where we can say, hey, coming out of Columbus, hey, maybe this team can win four of its final five games down the stretch?
Yeah, I think that for me, what would be tangible progress is scoring points in, I don't want to say when the game matters, because the game always matters until the end, of course, but in the thick and the heat of the game. I think that that's one of the biggest things that the detractors of the Michigan performance are going to point to is, oh, Iowa was able to score those points when Michigan called the dogs off in a way where they were up by 20 points. It was into the fourth quarter. They were pretty comfortable with the lead. They probably didn't feel like the game was in jeopardy at that point, and that Iowa kind of see some momentum at the end. I think that fans want to see an Iowa offense come out and not only have a good initial first drive, which they did have against Illinois. They came out and they scored points, but sustain that over a period of time, kind of like a punch, like landing a punch, and then being able to maybe take a punch and then giving a counter punch back. I think that that's something that we haven't really seen Iowa's team on, especially on offense, do this year, where there might be a spurt where the offense does a good thing and then the other team responds, and then Iowa kind of, you know, there's a lull. They're not really punching back. There's not an immediate answer, kind of, you know, has these ebbs and flows. So I think that I want to see an offense have sustained success throughout the entire game. And to your point about moral victories, which nobody wants to hear about, Iowa and what they want to accomplish is very much right there in front of them. They're going to play every other team in the Big Ten West with the exception of Illinois for the rest of the season, so they control their own destiny that way. Illinois still has to go to Michigan, so there's a potential loss there, and there's going to have to be an upset along the way for them to maybe have a potential third loss or fourth loss or whatever the case may be. But this is this Big Ten West race is very far from settled. So I think that if fans can come out of this feeling better about the team, and then you have a game in Northwestern where they're going to be very much favored, Iowa wins that game, maybe they're 4-4, and there's a possibility to maybe run the table, go 8-4, and you see what happens at the end. I think that's where the fans are going to feel the most optimistic. So for what I want to see is first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, sustained momentum, and then a puncher's chance in the fourth quarter, I think, is really all that you can ask for.
Yeah, that would be – I'd be surprised, to be honest, if Iowa is in the game in the fourth quarter, but we will see. One thing that I think worth mentioning is that Ryan Day in today's press conference talked a lot about the 2017 game and how he's talked to his team about kind of atoning for that. So probably not the greatest news there. If you Ryan Day was on that staff with Urban Meyer back in 17. So that is fresh to him still. That 55-24 result. And I don't think any Iowa players are tapping into that 17 result saying, well, that's the game plan to win. But they do see, hey, we can play with these guys if we give it our best shot. So speaking of playing with their best guys, Kennington, our second down topic today is about injuries. Coming out of the off week, you would think he would be a little bit healthier. However, today with Kirk Ferentz, I would not say that a lot of reinforcements have made it back. In fact, maybe the Hawkeyes have taken a step back in the loss of Terry Roberts from this game. He kind of went out with I wouldn't say it was an innocuous injury, but it didn't seem like super severe at Illinois, but he has been ruled out this Saturday at Ohio State. And when Ohio State has NFL receivers at pretty much every position, that's probably not good to be down one of the cornerbacks. I'll let you run down a few of the injury notes from today, and we can discuss.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Terry Roberts is unlikely to play. Wyatt Black, they say, is hopeful, but there's nothing declarative there. Wide receiver Deontay Vines has a chance per Kirk Ferentz, but it's a wait and see. It seems like there hasn't been much progress on the Keegan Johnson front. He pretty much just kind of said, when he's healthy, I'll let you know. I think that, obviously he's probably a little tired of answering that question every week. So it's just kind of a, when I know you'll know type of thing. That's the kind of vibe that I got from him on that front. I think that's about it as far as the injuries. Nick DeYoung also didn't play against Illinois. He was in street clothes, but he did travel and he was listed on the depth chart, I believe. So guess we can mark him up into playing. We didn't get an update on Jacob Bostic, but I feel like he'll probably be available. He's dressed out the last few weeks as well. So, to your point, coming out of a bye, and that was one of the things that I was really looking to in this presser, because that was even more than the questions about what the offense can do in the bye week. I'm talking about at the end of the Illinois game, we got a chance to talk to players. It seemed like every single player that we talked to pointed to the bye week as an opportunity for their bodies to get healthy. They've been playing for 10 weeks, fall camp, and 6 games. A lot of them seem to be looking forward to giving their bodies some rest. So I was very interested in how much progress the team can make in that regard. Maybe if they could be full tilt, that in itself is an improvement from the team that we saw against Illinois and the team that we've seen in the last 6 weeks. And it feels like, to your point, if they're not exactly the same as they were on the health front, you could argue that they're worse off, because Terry has been having a breakout year. You maybe make the case he's been the best cornerback on the team this year, performance-wise. And I know Cooper's played great as well, but he's played some cash as well. Just somebody who's played exclusively corner, Terry's had a great year. So that is a really big loss. And they're going up against, the best wide receiver core in the country. And if Jackson Smith and Jigba is to play on Saturday and Ryan Day wasn't declarative on that front either, then that is a huge challenge for that secondary, for an offense that scored on 30 of their last 38 possessions have been touchdowns. So it's a very daunting task, and they're going to be without one of their better players. So I'm going to have something on the defense coming up on Friday as well. We're going to get a little bit more into that matchup, but that's not something that Hawkeye fans want to hear. But if Wyatt Black can come back, that will shore up the run game. So maybe there's a little bit of a trade-off there, but you definitely want Terry back into the fold as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I did talk to Logan Lee a little bit today, and he says he's going to be fine. He had the shoulder injury at Illinois. I kind of said, are you sure? I didn't like sound super convincing. He was like, yeah, I'll be out there. So we'll see. We'll see about Logan Lee. I guess, I mean, he's going to play. He's on the depth chart, he says anyway. So that's helpful. But something Kirk Ferentz said today as well is, like, this is the biggest offensive line that they've played. I mean, Iowa's played a lot of pretty tough offensive lines the last few weeks in Michigan and Illinois. And I thought Michigan's was really good. This one might be even better. This just seems like a really, really steep challenge on the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, to be down Roberts, not good. And think about this. You've got two Iowa-born kind of, I don't know, small – I wouldn't say small school because Riley Moss wasn't a small school kid, but between Cooper DeJean and Riley Moss, you've got two Iowa kids playing cornerback against, you know, potentially Jackson Smith and Jigba and Marvin Harrison Jr. and others. I'm forgetting the other receiver's name off the top of my head, but he's their leading receiver, Egbuka. And so this is going to be a
Julian
task.
Fleming.
And him too.
Is it Julian Fleming? No, he was the number one player in his class. Yeah.
Okay, well, and then Amika Egbuka is the other that's high in receptions this year. 35 catches, 655 yards. It's a statistical, dream on Ohio State's offense compared to what Iowa's done this season. I guess just messaging from the players today, Kennington, what kind of have you heard? Again, kind of going again with this kind of underdog mentality, knowing they're up against it. Anything that stood out to you before we moved down to third down?
Yeah, I think that for me, and I spent a lot of time with Caleb Johnson today. This is his first time at a Tuesday presser. He's from an Ohio kid. He just felt like for him personally and for the team, this is an opportunity to prove doubters wrong. Speaking on him, somebody who's from Ohio, probably, you know, wasn't heavily recruited by Ohio State. And he said he's been doubted, you know, just throughout his life playing football. It's an opportunity for him to go and show something. And he said for the team to be that severe of underdogs, one of the biggest underdogs in Kirk Ferentz's entire tenure, the opportunity to go prove people wrong, not only within the stadium, but on a more national level, that they can play against, you know, one of the best teams in the country, I think is an exciting opportunity for him. I think that in that same regard, if you're looking at the defensive side, there's probably people from the outside saying that this is going to be a game where Ohio State's receivers are really going to get off on them. They're going to score a lot of points, and that's going to contribute to the high point spread. I think the defensive players are taking that challenge on head on as well. So I think that they're embracing the challenge. I don't think that anybody on the team is shying away from the fact that they're underdogs. And I think Kirk Ferentz said as much today as well, like, we are very aware that the odds are against us. We're very aware that people think that this is a mismatch, and we're not naive to it, and they're not shying away from it. But this is a spot, and you can speak to this more than me as somebody who has grown up watching the team and covered it longer than me, that this is a spot where the team and the program usually thrives in these type of underdog type of roles. So I don't think it's anything particularly new. Just this point spread is a lot bigger. So I think that the players are really embracing the challenge, and I think that they're pretty excited for the opportunity to go and play at the stadium and play in front of the crowd and maybe have a chance to prove some doubters wrong and maybe get a signature win or at least a marquee performance that could set the tone for the rest of the way.
Yeah, some of the guys on defense today talked about just making Ohio State kind of work its way down the field, avoiding those big plays. That seems to be the Iowa strategy this week. We kind of saw them try that against Michigan as well. Michigan was extremely patient and made it work and made Iowa's defense, you know, look bad at times. I mean, they scored, you know, 20 points in the first five possessions and gained over 300 yards and kind of took the air out of that game. That's another part of this. If Iowa's defense is on the field so much, you know, does the offense even get a chance to make an impact? Obviously, you have chances, but the opportunities could be limited for this Hawkeye offense, which, again, I think is why there's a lot of skepticism about whether Iowa can put much on the board this Saturday, but that's why we're going to cover the game. We'll see what happens. Third down, Kennington. Kind of wanted to take this topic a little bit more back into the quarterback conversation that we started last week with Brian Ferentz regarding you know, Spencer Petras and Alex Padilla. You know, there was a lot of Hawkeye Twitter, I would say, kind of having fun with the term backyard football over the course of 4 or 5 days there, as we got a chance to watch other football around the country. And I would have to say, I paid special attention to it, Kennington, and I don't get to watch a ton of college football live because we're covering the Hawkeyes on Saturdays. But it's really, 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 really notable to see pretty much every functional offense in the country has a quarterback that can avoid the pass rush. And that includes Aiden O'Connell at Purdue. I mean, he's not a mobile guy, but he – can avoid a rush for a few seconds and make a play. And we saw that in that Nebraska game, a high scoring game. It's just becoming more and more clear, I think, to people that you cannot continue this strategy of having a strictly pocket passer that's reliant completely on timing. What stood out to you as you watched college football over the weekend?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I noted. Than just the amount of points that it takes to win on a consistent basis. I mean, we talked before the show about the Tennessee-Alabama game. Took 52 points to win that game against a defense in Alabama that has NFL players everywhere and five-star talent. But to your point about, you know, quarterbacks with mobility, it's really, to me, and I don't want to say that it is impossible to move the ball or to have a functional offense without a moving quarterback, but that is exactly where the game is going. And you could look at it on all levels. I mean, you look at the NFL, there are very, very, very few starting quarterbacks now in the NFL who do not have the ability to move the ball with their legs. And I'm thinking off the top of my head, Matt Ryan and Tom Brady are probably the only two. And the Bucs offensive line has had struggles all year, and that offense has struggled, and the Colts have had struggles as well. But all around the league, you're seeing players being able to extend plays and move the ball with their legs. And in some cases, like the Atlanta Falcons, their entire offense is predicated on read options, and they're in the first place in their division. So that's with the quarterback in Marcus Mariota, who isn't considered an elite talent. I mean, you just look at the game of football. It is getting bigger, stronger, faster, and more athletic. You have defensive linemen and defensive ends who are able to chase down running backs from behind and chase down receivers from behind. And you have linebackers who are getting matched up on receivers and running backs in coverage and being able to kind of hold their own in that way. I mean, the game is only getting faster. You're going to need a quarterback with some type of movement and athleticism to extend plays, or at least, and if you're not going to have that, then you need to have a Joe Moore winning offensive line, which to this point, Iowa doesn't have one of those right now. They might be good, you know, next year or in the years to come, but for this year and the here and the now, the offensive line is not that. And that's going to limit a lot of what Iowa can do with Spencer at quarterback. But it doesn't look like I'm not going to say it doesn't look like there is not going to be a change right now with the scene. They feel like he gives them the best chance to win, but that's something that I think that when you don't watch your team and you have a chance to just watch across the country, it does reinforce the point that there are other offenses that are more advanced, farther along, adapting with the times and what they're able to do in the depth of their playbook and maybe the type of plays and the schemes that they can run because they have a quarterback that can move. It really just kind of hits home about how maybe restricted the offense is when you don't have that type of component in a starting quarterback.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking of all the different teams I watched over the weekend and NFL and college, and you can change. I mean, you can change quickly. You can bring in a brand new offensive coordinator and scheme and style and go to the portal. There is a path to making this a non, like, you know, nails on a chalkboard, long drawn out process where you're like incrementally getting more mobile at quarterback, you know, over the years. I know Iowa's recruiting a little bit better at that position, at least in terms of mobility, with Linez and James Rezard coming in, and of course Joe Labus on the team already. But I think philosophically, to me, these timing routes that Iowa keeps talking about is just, they're just so out of date in terms of what's possible. You don't even see Patrick Mahomes. That's my point. You don't even see Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, who are great quarterbacks and can throw from the pocket. You just don't see them throwing a lot of timed routes to a spot. They are shuffling around, making plays, buying time, you know, looking for that, you know, Travis Kelce to just do a little improvisation in his route so that he can get the completion or whatever. That's just what it is now. You can't – it's just it almost seems like we've done a little bit of a disservice, almost like letting this topic kind of linger for so long. And I think back to last year's Big Ten championship game against Michigan, and it was just like – I remember writing after that game, I was like, you've got to change the offense. Like, there's no – like, this has to change. And then they scored 17 points in the bowl game, Kennington, and it's like, you know, Iowa was like, okay, see, we can do it. You know, and this we're on the right track. And it was just so such a misguided step to take what happened in that bowl game against Kentucky defense that was down a lot of defensive players, and to conclude that you were really close on offense. It's just – it's amazing how much of a misstep that was. And we're living through it right now with this Iowa offense. We will see how it finishes. But it really hit home for me, I guess. And I know it's beating a little bit of a dead horse here to keep talking about this. But backyard football is football now. And there's no getting away from that. Backyard football plays, I should say, that happen throughout the course of a game. It's constant. It happens every single series in the NFL and in good college football. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, when you think of the backyard football thing, is kind of funny also, just because I saw it on my timeline a lot from pretty much like the Thursday game through Monday night. Whenever I saw a quarterback making a play with their legs, like, you could go on Twitter and you could just see like a whole bunch of people on the timeline, like, backyard football, backyard football, backyard football, backyard football, just kind of trolling a little bit. So that was pretty amusing. But I would agree with you in terms of where the game is going. And I think that for so long, you could look to something like the NFL and say, you know, the backyard football or the simplified concepts or the air raid or whatever might work in high school, might work in college, but it wouldn't work in the NFL. Now you see more and more of the NFL adapting those same concepts. You see the players, the Kyler Murrays and the Lamar Jacksons and those types. Those are the best quarterbacks in the NFL now. Look, Patrick Mahomes and I'm blanking on some others, but you get where I'm going with this. The Zach Wilsons, the all of those type of quarterbacks. That's the new wave of the NFL, and you're looking at it now in college football. The next wave is on the way with the Bryce Youngs, and CJ Stroud doesn't have to run because his offensive line is so good, but he has that capability as well. And that's just kind of where the game is going. Like I said, it's growing more and more and more in athleticism, and the longer that you wait to adapt with the times, the more difficult it's going to be. I feel like, for as bad as the offense has performed over the last several years, I feel like this is almost kind of like the apex of that type of trend this season. Iowa has been successful over the last several years, but when you're not as successful and you're not, you know, the number two team in the country like they were a year ago today, and you're 3-3, and you're having a lot more time to kind of like sit down and criticize it and pinpoint exactly what's happening, that's when I think it really hits home. So, you know, I agree with everything that you said about just kind of what happened at the end of the season and kind of maybe how it was covered or how we perceived it and what's happening this year. I think that, you know, there is no question and no doubt in my mind that there should be change. And I feel like there will be change at the end of the year. I just feel like it's just kind of one of those things where Kirk said it after the Illinois game, that they are what they are. Just get through the year as best you can. And then going into the offseason, there has to be something that is going to be done because it's not going to get better. That's just my personal opinion. I don't think it's going to get better. I think it's only going to continue to get worse from here, or at least stay at the same level. I mean, they're last offensively in the country. So I don't see a pathway up with this type of scheme and this type of philosophy. There has to be some type of pivot in order for them to continue to be competitive moving forward.
You are the king of ending things on a down note, Kennington. That was pretty bad. I don't see it getting better. Kennington Smith says to close today's podcast.
I feel like, and I've said this on other shows. I mean, the defense is great, obviously, but next year there's not going to be Jack Campbell and Riley Moss, and probably not going to be a Kayvon Merry. If the defense took literally a half a step back and the offense stayed exactly where the same or got worse with the same schedule they have now, Iowa might not even be 3-3. They're giving up 10 points per game. That is incredible. And they're 3-3. So, unless the defense is going to give up 0 points per game and the offense stays the same, then I just don't see a pathway to competing for Big Ten championships and West Division titles, which is what a Hawkeye fan want. They don't want bowl eligibility. They don't want to be 500 and just scraping by for bowl eligibility. They want to compete with the better teams in the country. And I feel like they see it. I feel like we both see it. If the offense doesn't make improvements, that is just not going to be possible.
All right. So stay tuned to our radio show tomorrow night. Kennington Smith, Chad Lystico, Des Moines Register. We will talk a little bit about the NBA because I've tasked Kennington to give you Hawk fans a little bit of a season preview of the Sacramento Kings. For those of you who want to be Kings fans this year, they start tomorrow night against the Trailblazers. So we're going to have a little segment on that tomorrow night. Thanks for joining this football conversation. We will continue that, obviously, tomorrow, previewing Ohio State more hardcore. Thanks, Kennington Smith. And we will, and this is Chad Lystico saying so long for the Hawk Central podcast. Talk to you later.